Ira Kurzban has been the lead lawyer for Haitian refugees over the last 15 years. He's litigated cases, the leading cases in Miami, which have resulted in the ending of policies of mass detention, mass hearings of Haitian refugees, and has been an inspiration to many of us, began me in this work, and we are very honored to have him here today. He is also, of course, the special counsel to the government of Haiti and to President Aristide.
Mr. President, Mr. Ambassador, Mr. Consul, honored guests, when John F. Kennedy was president, it was once reported that at a meeting of Nobel Prize laureates at the White House, that he said the only other time that there was more intelligence gathered in one place is when Thomas Jefferson sat there alone. For those of us who have worked with Jean-Bertrand Aristide, we not only believe this to be true, we know it to be true. Jean-Bertrand Aristide is a psychologist. He is an author of 6 books. He is a biblical scholar. He speaks 7 languages, including Hebrew. At 38 years old, he became the first democratically elected president of Haiti in an election that was supervised by the United Nations. It was an election in which over 75% of the Haitian people voted in a 10-candidate race, and he achieved over 67% of the vote, an event which is unprecedented probably in Western democratic history. He is a person who in Haiti and among those who have had the opportunity to know him is a truly revered person. It is my pleasure, and I have to tell you that President Aristide, in his typical both humility and humor, has asked me today to speak on his behalf. And I have declined the opportunity to do so, Mr. President, not because they're not as interested in hearing me, I'm sure, as they are in you, but for the sake of time and interest, it is my pleasure to introduce the Honorable Jean-Bertrand Aristide, President of the Republic of Haiti.
Professor Anka, dear friend Antonio Ayala, students, faculty of Harvard University, you can just look at my face and you will realize how happy I am. Indeed, I'm happy to be with you this afternoon. I'm so delighted to be here, and I would like to thank all of you for this great opportunity you gave to me to share with you what I think about the refugees issue, what I think about our fight for democracy. From all that I have read of Harvard's participation last year in defending the rights of our refugees detained in Guantanamo, I know that I am among friends of Haiti. On behalf of our nation, we thank you for this critical support. I also know that because we are in a university community, I am among rational and thinking individuals. Individuals trained to examine objective evidence and demonstrable fact before reaching a conclusion. Indeed, it is the task of all universities to train students to be able to confront every theory with this analytical eye. In your defense of Haitian refugees, you engage in this analysis. You did not blindly accept the theory that all Haitian refugees are economic refugees, that they do not merit political asylum, or that repatriation is justified. You examined the relevant law. You studied the rights created under the law and applied this analysis to documented facts describing repression in Haiti. This led you to a conclusion different from that asserted in other theories about our refugees. This analysis led to your commitment of time, skill, and energy in their defense. It is my hope that our dialogue today can lead to the application of this same objective analysis to the theories underlying strategies proposed to restore democracy to Haiti. My dear friend Ira refused to talk for me, so in communion with him, I will continue to seek strategies. No doubt, in the last few weeks, you have heard many different views on the restoration of democracy to Haiti. One group claims to have the definitive plan for democracy in Haiti. Others think that the plan for democracy can somehow be concocted independent from Haiti's history and the current reality. And still others claim that Haiti is ready for only a certain kind of democracy. Everything is done in the name of democracy. Even the September 1991 coup is said to have been committed in the name of democracy. Those in Haiti with the weapons say that they are acting in the name of democracy, and at every turn cite the Constitution to justify their actions. In this rush towards democracy, two strategies have emerged: the strategy of the gun and the strategy of the pen. The coup leaders have chosen the gun. This strategy is rooted in murder, lies, economic self-interest, and dilatory maneuvers. This is not my subjective judgment. This is a rational conclusion that can be demonstrated by facts. Over 5,000 people killed, over 300,000 people internally displaced and in hiding in Haiti. Legislators supportive of democracy have been threatened or executed, others silenced by force and intimidation. Tens of thousands of refugees forced to the seas and unknown hundreds lost at sea. Last year in Detroit, I met a young kid from Haiti, close to 9-11 years old. He is a refugee, and I asked him, "Why did you leave the country?" He said, "I saw the military burning so many houses, burning so many people. I got afraid, and I just left." I asked him, "What about your mother and your father?" He said, "They don't know if I am here, whether or not I am still alive." You can imagine how tragic that can be, facing a young kid like that, being a refugee in this situation. There are so many kids who lost their mother, so many others who lost their fathers, as there are so many husbands who lost their wives, and so many wives who lost their husband. We have among us this afternoon someone who is very special to us, because she is one of the women who lost their husband. I'm talking about the wife of our Minister of Justice, they shot on October the way you knew. She is with us. If you don't mind, I would ask you to join me to encourage her. I'm talking about Mrs. Florence Eli. Could you come, please, a bit? Thank you so much. On September 11, 1993, the same day when in the church of Port-au-Prince, Sacré-Cœur, the military and attaché people, they armed, went to that church and they dragged Antoine Ismeri, they shot him in front of the international observers, almost in the same place where they shot our Minister of Justice 1 month later. That night of September 11, I called the wife of Antoine Ismeri, the man they shot in the morning. And it wasn't easy for me to talk to her, because you can imagine how it's hard for you talking to someone who just lost the husband in that condition. And she told me, Titid, that's my name, don't worry, I understand, how do you feel? Just think about that, she said. I am proud of my husband. That's what she said. Just to say, facing death, we meet people having courage enough to move towards life. The OSUN civilian mission in Haiti recently reported that over 70 people were executed in a 6-week period in Port-au-Prince. As recently as last week, the OSUN observers attempting to investigate human rights abuses were forced to flee the city of Hesh as mobs of military supporters assaulted them, while the military command itself looked on and did nothing to prevent it. These are the result of the brutal coup, a coup that was motivated and is sustained by the greed of a small group that controls Haiti. Since the coup, we saw the strategy of the gun. What we have as results, it's what we thought, we spoke about: assassination, murders, lies, corruption, blood. That's the strategy of the gun. They choose the gun to kill people and democracy. We could ask a question: why do they do that? Of course, in our dialogue, we will have the opportunity to look for reasons. Let me share with you one of these reasons. For me, one of these reasons comes from drug trafficking. On August 1991, 1 month before the coup happened, we signed a bilateral agreement with the US government while the Vice President Dan Quayle was in Haiti. It was an agreement allowing as two governments, Haitian government and the US government, fighting together against drugs trafficking. Unfortunately, to go back to drug trafficking, around $40 million were invested to lead the coup. That's why since the coup to today, Haiti became the second largest country in the hemisphere dealing in drug trafficking. It's close to 50 tons of cocaine, flowing to Haiti, passing through Haiti to come here and to go somewhere else. That means $1.2 billion a year going to Haiti because of that corruption. It is no small wonder that the coup leaders are seeking to continue the statu quo. The coup has been enormously profitable. These are the conditions that my citizens face in Haiti. This is what forces them to flee. In recent months, nearly every time the U.S. Coast Guard has returned refugees to Haiti, agents of the police have pulled the returnees out of the Red Cross processing lines and arrested them. I am compelled to make the analogy that Haiti is like a house on fire. When those inside somehow find a way to escape, the U.S. Coast Guard throws them back into the burning house. We, on the other hand, have chosen the strategy of the pen. We have opted for non-violence, peaceful democratic change, and true reconciliation rather than violence. What does it mean to pursue a strategy of non-violence and peaceful democratic change in this 30-month struggle that has already claimed the lives of over 5,000 of our citizens? First, strict adherence to truth. Second, determination. And third, dialogue, while rejecting all dilatory maneuvers. These are the weapons in our arsenal. These are the parameters of our negotiations. These principles are based on democratic values and not the economic interests that motivate the strategy of the gang. People over money. Therefore, our immediate goal is to stop the murders. Our strategy is not based only on a political philosophy. It is also rooted in a political experience. That means our 7 months in office. In those 7 months, we stopped the exodus of our citizens from Haiti. There was no refugee crisis. Haitians were secure in their country. There was no political repression to flee. In fact, Haitians who had long relocated to the United States and elsewhere returned to Haiti happy to participate in this new experiment of democracy in Haiti. We began to work with the military to end the historic tensions between civil society and the army. We have a so-called army. When you hear us talking about our army, please don't move from your army to understand our army, because we don't have an army. We have 7,000 so-called officials and soldiers, having more than 40% of the national budget. And in those past 30 months, they already killed over 5,000 people. So we are paying them to kill us. And if I say that so-called army can have more than 40% of the national budget, think about it. Less than 1% of the population have only, I say only, more than 45% of the national revenue. Can you imagine that? Do you see why do I say they have only? It's a way to say how tragic it is. We cannot save Haiti without the strategy of the pen. And this strategy will lead us to reconciliation. We say no to vengeance, no to retaliation, yes to reconciliation, but we also say no to impunity. If you are studying law, we cannot move from law blessing impunity. That's not the way to build a society of law. That's not the way to lead a society towards reconciliation. To promote that reconciliation and justice within our society, we choose a government that reflected the true composition of the nation. Women, blacks, and mulattoes were nominated to key posts. Immediate action was taken to reform a judicial system that was never able to dispense true justice. In Haiti, if you have money, you just buy justice. If you don't have money, forget about justice, you will not get it. Section chiefs who function as police, prosecutor, and judge in the countryside were removed. They were replaced by impartial magistrates. These changes were welcome and began to instill faith in the democratic institutions that we sought to strengthen. We ended the traditional practice of looting the government treasury. Through diligent efforts to enforce the tax laws, in the first 4 months of our administration, we saw an increase by 41 million good in the government's monthly revenues. In our short time in office, our government was able to secure commitments of foreign assistance of $511 million, more than twice that received by the government in the previous year. Our government was praised for our reform measures. The World Bank reported that, and I quote, "The coming into office of Haiti's democratically elected government provides a window of opportunity for the country to finally move towards sustained social and economic progress." As I have often repeated, we were moving from misery to poverty with dignity. And we still want to move from misery to poverty with dignity. Later, you will see why I insist by saying we want to move from misery to poverty with dignity. It's part of our strategy of the pen versus the gun that we have adopted to resolve, to restore democracy. And it is consistent with democratic principles of justice, transparency, and participation that proved successful during our first 7 months in office. Under the strategy of nonviolence and peaceful democratic change as a first step, the military high command and the chief of police must be replaced by military officials who respect the constitution and will follow civilian authority. If not, the systematic violence, terror, and violation of human rights that our citizens face daily will continue until sufficient pressure is placed on them to ensure their removal. They will continue to consistently block efforts to restore democracy in Haiti. So now, after seeing the strategy of the gun on one side, and on the other side, the strategy of the pen, how do you see the international community? What do you think about the international community? Do you think they choose the strategy of the pen? Do you think they choose the strategy of the gun? Of course, the enemies of democracy have chosen the gun, the violence, murders, and lies. We have chosen the pen. But what about the international community? Officially, the international community said, we choose the strategy of the pen. Practically, we don't see yet actions to prove they didn't choose the strategy of the gun. In very eloquent statements, the international community has chosen the strategy of the pen, but too often, the statements have not been followed by action. on July 3rd, 1993, we signed an agreement at Governor's Island, and it was said that the Commander-in-Chief of the Army would leave on October 15th. What happened? Nothing. He's still there. On January 15th, four countries, including United States, set a deadline for the coup leaders. They told them, if you don't leave on January 15th, we will increase the sanctions against you. What happened? Nothing. They are still in the same place with the same weapons, of course, following the same strategy of repression. The people of Haiti are continuing to lose faith in the international community, but we believe in ourselves. We will continue to believe in ourselves as a people, proud people, fighting in a peaceful way for democracy, dying for democracy. And because we know that hope is the people and the friends, the real friends of the people, we will continue to say, democracy will be back because of us and our friends. That's why even if the Haitian people continue to lose faith in the international community, I can tell you, this is my faith, they will never lose faith in themselves. Our nation of over 85% illiterate citizens is not complacent. Despite the violence, the people of Haiti continue to fight for democracy. In the face of this embargo, the people continue to support our government. It is an embargo? A real one? A total one? No. It's a sham embargo. That's why the people of Haiti continue to fight for democracy, even they realize that this sham embargo, instead of the total one we ask for, will not lead us to democracy. Fighting, of course, we will reach that level where democracy will flourish. They denounce the violations of human rights by the military leaders and risk their lives to participate in secret networks that give refuge to those in hiding. 30 months since the coup, and the Haitian people continue to resist. They have chosen to break from a political tradition dominated by dictatorship and marred by repeated military coup. And that's why, when they still continue losing faith in the international community, facing their history, we understand we can move toward that democracy. This is one fact which is very eloquent. We got our independence in 1804. Since 1804 to 1957, when Duvalier took office, we had 36 Haitian heads of states. Among those 36, 24 were overthrown by a coup. So the army used to pass from a coup to another one. But since the last coup, which happened 3 years ago, something is different. There is a kind of move towards the structures of exploitation, of repression. And the people of Haiti, while losing faith in the international community, is still having more faith in themselves. And of course, in our real friends like you. So we move towards a new world order. That march towards self-determination, revived in February 1986 with the overthrow of Duvalier, peaked in 1987 with the ratification of the Constitution, and culminated in the first free and fair elections in our nation's history in December 1990. This march cannot be stopped. What do you conclude then? We pass from the strategy of the gun, we face the strategy of the pen, we look at the international community, and now how could we look at ourselves facing this reality, facing the strategy of the gun versus the strategy of the pen? There is a current in philosophy that pushes for the human will to be rational, logical, and based in scientific analysis. The German philosophers, Hegel, Husserl, adopted phenomenology as a philosophical methodology to examine events without preconceptions so as to discover the transcendent structures of the conscience. Jean-Paul Sartre, in his treatise, Being and Nothingness, sought to do the same. We should follow this objective line of thinking as we analyze the strategies to restore democracy to Haiti. We must be rational. We cannot say that red is blue because of the guns or economic interests and lies that motivate the strategy of the gun. Our challenge is to demonstrate with the pen through our strategy of nonviolence that red is red. We must reject irrational conclusions. This is not often easy. Those with the guns, the enemies of truth, have money to influence public opinion. But those of us who use the pen, dialogue, and peaceful democratic change as weapons have always had to search for solutions. And in search solution, in our search, we must move to where the people of Haiti lead us. You know, we have 85% illiterate in Haiti. So while we are moving with the strategy of the pen, they don't even have the pen. And they have to go further. And we have to follow them. This is democracy for us. It is they with no pens who are the principal actors in the policy to restore democracy in Haiti. Are we, academics and literate people, able to read from the lives of the Haitian people? What is the message to us? It is a message to the world, rooted in democratic principles, urging politicians and policymakers to design policy based upon democratic principles and not economic interest. This is the real politic in Haiti, and this can be the real politic in the New World Order. As we pursue the policy of the pen as our strategy to restore democracy to Haiti, we must be true to the meaning of democracy. Democracy is the will of the people, either directly or through the elected officials. Since when can a small minority dictate to the majority? We welcome a dialogue to achieve these 8 points that we believe will lead to the restoration of democracy. First, the departure of the military high command and the chief of police. Second, the parliament's passage of laws provided for in the New York Pact. Third, the deployment of the UN Technical Assistance Mission. Fourth, the designation of a new prime minister. Five, my return within 10 days of the nomination of the prime minister. Six, the lifting of sanctions. Seven, ratification of the prime minister. Eight, resumption of aid to Haiti, to a Haiti where you will be welcome, a Haiti where democracy will flourish, a Haiti no longer ruled by the gun, a Haiti that will reap the benefits of our solidarity, a Haiti that will welcome its refugees home. There, with you, we will not have bullets, but ballots. And we thank you for that.
Professor Steiner, who is the director of the Human Rights Program, is going to moderate the question and answer part of this program.
I apologize for being late. We had a faculty meeting at which it was not important but vital to remain until the very end, and that very end was just 10 minutes ago or so. So I'm sorry to have missed part of your talk. I had the privilege of hearing the end of it. What we have now is a period of roughly half an hour for questions, and I see mics on either side, so that I suggest that those of you who wish to put questions advance to one or the other mic, and I'll simply, you know, oscillate between them. And let me make just one request. We have only a half hour, so that please make a question and make a brief one. Don't make a statement long or short, right? We'll want to hear from President Aristide as much as possible. So please come forward to the mics if you wish to ask any questions. Yes.
President,
you want to identify yourself, or just as a student, or whatever?
President Aristide, I'm a student at Harvard Law School, and it's an honor to have the opportunity to ask you a question. You said that we must be rational, and I'd like to ask you, how do you see the implementation of democratic institutions in Haiti? Do you see an implementation of the type of institutions, say, as practiced by the United States, or do you see the need to reinvent the institutions so that they are more adaptable to Haiti? And do you see the relationship with the United States as constraining the choices that among which Haiti has to pick to implement democracy?
Thank you. I used to describe Haiti like a broken glass. That's why months ago I decided to choose a rich man, a wealthy man, to become our prime minister, because I wanted that way to build a bridge, a human bridge, among rich and poor. That's why in our government we have two men from the army. One is a general, another one is a colonel. We have four ministers coming from four political parties. All that to say, we need unity. We have to build unity. Building unity, we can move to the institutions in order to have democratic institutions, and that will help us building democracy. But what we really need to achieve all those steps is first a political stability. If we don't create a climate where people can have a political stability, there is no way to talk about institutions to build democracy. There is no way to see the result of that process of unity, of reconciliation. So now there is a house on fire. We ask the US and our real friends to help us stopping the killers, and that way we can really pave the way towards democracy.
Hello, President Aristide. My name is Gerta Benoit. I'm from Haiti, a young woman who hopes to have democracy in Haiti so that someday she may be able to return and bring some of the knowledge that she has learned here from the United States into a country that she calls her own. My question has to do with the embargo. It always seems to me that by putting an embargo on a country such as Haiti that is so impoverished, it tends to hurt those that are poor instead of hurting those who are rich, because they always have the opportunity to leave their state. How do you see that embargo will benefit the people who are the ones suffering currently?
Thank you. Let's see quickly two aspects of the embargo. To understand the first one, I should describe quickly, in a few words, what do we have as reality in terms of misery. If I said less than 1% of the population can have more than 45% of the national revenue, if I said for one soldier we can have 1,000 Haitians, I have to say for 10,000 Haitians we don't have two doctors, just 1.8. We have 56 hospitals in Haiti, but for each 1,000 people in those so-called hospitals, we don't have two beds, just 1.5. I describe that to say we have a country where 70% of the population are living in the mountains, and there is no hospital. There is no electricity. There is no school, because after 200 years of independence, we still have 85% illiterate. Now, when we talk about embargo, we talk also about a special country where, since 200 years, those 70% of the population living in the mountains without hospital, without school, without electricity, had an embargo, which is a special embargo. Now, the second aspect of this question is this. We don't have a total embargo, which would make it in a shorter time. We have a sham embargo, because according to me, there is no political will to have a total embargo. If we had a total embargo, time ago, years ago, we would solve that problem. That's why we still don't have that total embargo, but a sham one, which make the co-leaders becoming richer, and some rich, richer, while the poor are suffering. But those poor suffering, let me move quickly to a very beautiful story, which is a real story, to make it clear. I met a journalist in Paris. He came from Haiti, especially from Cité Soleil, a poor place, where he met a lady, and that lady was pregnant. And the journalist wanted to know what that lady thinks about the embargo, what she thought about the embargo. And the lady told him, "Is it true you want to know what do I think about the embargo?" The journalist said, "Yes." "Do you see I am a pregnant lady?" The journalist said, "Yes." "When I will have my baby," she said, "I will call him embargo. I will call him embargo." Because the poor in Haiti would prefer to suffer under this embargo if they saw the embargo would lead us to democracy. That's why they are still asking for a total embargo, not that one.
Bonjour, président Aristide. Pour tout élève haïtien qui l'a aujourd'hui, on veut dire que nous bien content. Well, merci. For those who don't speak Creole, I thank President Aristide for his visit today on behalf of the Haitian students at Harvard University. Given the U.S. imperialistic interest in Haiti, as well as the military's refusal to relinquish power, Many would argue that a nonviolent approach to restoring democracy would seem rather unrealistic, and that only a popular armed revolution would remove the criminals from power and restore democracy to Haiti. Why have you ruled this option out?
Thank you. Difficult question. I will answer. Un gros coup de chapeau pour tout étudiant haïtien qui l'a, et me content ramasser. N'a pas fait mes veilles comme étudiant haïtien boïcide, continuer à briller tant que belles étoiles la caille. Now I move to English. I respect those who choose another strategy, and I can understand them. For instance, in 1979 in Nicaragua, they realized they had to fight not in a peaceful way for the freedom, and they did, and I respect that. In Haiti, where we have an island, where those who have so many weapons, they are so rich, $1.2 billion a year, that's what they are getting. So money enough to buy weapons, in addition of what they already had. While this huge majority of our population, we don't have weapons. Because we want to be rational, as I was saying, if now we would move to their field, they would be stronger than us. That's why, as Gandhi, I prefer to stay where I was, in our nonviolent field, in order to have the principles in our hands to fight against them. For instance, of course, with the weapons, they could lead the coup, but it's also a failure. Since 30 months, they are isolated. We are recognized, unfortunately, except the Vatican, and you know that. So, we will continue pushing for a non-violent strategy while we recognize a legitimate defense as a moral issue. So we just make a dialectic between a legitimate defense as a moral issue and a nonviolent strategy. And there is no doubt, from my point of view, we will win. We will win. We will win.
Thank you.
I'm a reporter from the Christian Science Monitor, and I'd like to ask you, I know that negotiations from the military side, from your side, and from the U.S.'s point of view are kind of at an impasse. Everyone has their own plans and no one's sort of meeting. And I'm interested to know how you hope, without you compromising, without the military compromising, how your 8 points will ever come into place.
Thank you. First of all, if there were a political will, we would have a total embargo, not a sham embargo. So we need to see a clear political will coming from the international community while we are still committed to fight for democracy. We already lost over 5,000 people. Now, knowing how the military have a project for death, not for life, they just cannot continue moving the way they are doing. If it were so easy for them to make the country work, it's long time ago, they would do it. So time is not only against us, it's also against them. So moving that way, after making so many concessions, now, for instance, we stop. It's up to them to do their concessions. We wish they will do that because it will be good for them. We wish the U.S. government will really seize a solution which is a solution for us and for the U.S. How do they can solve the refugees crisis without the restoration of democracy? When we were in office during our 7 months, not only we saw the Haitians staying in Haiti because we love our country, we are proud of our country. We want to stay home, and they were staying home, and we had so many Haitians moving from the diaspora to Haiti. And I know a lot of them are here, and they are thinking about their day to be in Haiti after the study here. And we are working to change Haiti in order to welcome them back home, because I know how do they love their country. It's a way to say, having that reality, the U.S. can solve a problem for the U.S., helping us solving a problem for us, the way in the past we Haitian soldiers, we came here, we built solidarity with the American brothers, and we fought for the independence of United States. We were proud of doing that. How the American brothers today can be proud helping us to restore democracy to Haiti.
Mr. President, I'm Victor Navasky, the editor of The Nation magazine, and I'm a fellow at the Institute of Politics here at Harvard. You've said that the United States should adopt a real embargo and should change its policy towards Haitian refugees. What other concrete steps do you think the Clinton administration should take and can take to help restore you to power in Haiti?
I think it's not easy for them to move to any other step if they don't demonstrate that political will I was talking about. Because to have a real embargo, we need a political will. To close the border between Santo Domingo and Haiti, it's just a question of having a political will. When the United States, with three other countries, told the military, if you don't step down on January 15, we will increase the sanctions against you. By doing that, I am convinced we would already have the solution. And this is, from our point of view, the first step which has to be reached. But first of all, we need a political will.
Do you have a sense whether the impasse is in the White House or the State Department or where it is in our government?
Allow me to answer that way. It's somewhere.
My name is Joseph from Fedjoste.
I want to say, firstly, thank you very much for your truth. I appreciate that a great deal. I'm Haitian American, and I hope to return myself. My question to you is, since the United States has made their proclamation on their definition of democracy for Haiti, which is to keep the prime minister in his place and have you return somehow, have they made any other steps, or have they, with that decision, decided to wash their hands of the situation?
So far, nothing else, if we talk in terms of concrete action. Statements, dialogue, and we still want to dialogue. We are in dialogue with them in order to achieve a new step, which can be a concrete one.
Thank you.
Now from Kebelawi?
Ha.
Solid.
Abese.
Okay.
My name is Joseph Fedjoste. I'm originally from Haiti, on the south, between Port Salut and Kai, same town with you, which we said with. Same town. But my question, Mr. Aristide, I want to know You got almost 22 months outside in Haiti. But you got 7 months in power in Haiti. But I want you to know, when you back in Haiti, what do you think? Take it out the 7 months, you got a power over there, or you got you were elected democratic over 5 years. You know, that's why, you know, I want you to know what's going to happen. You're going to still got to make a 5 years, or if you take it out the 7 months, you know, whatever. I don't know. That's why I want you to know.
What do you think? Because you are studying law. What do you think? My answer. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, here is my answer. Thank you. Thank you. It's a good way. It's a good way to talk and practice democracy. The president has to listen to the majority. Why? Thank you. So here is my answer. While I will continue to listen to the Haitian people, I will respect the Constitution.
Okay, Mr. President, I'm dying to make you 5 years because I'm busy to know the guy. I'm dying to know the
guy. President Aristide, I too am a Haitian student here at Harvard, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you here today. My question is, you mentioned in your speech that one of the 8 points for your restoration of democracy is to have the leader of the military and the police step down. But it seems to me that over the past years, the military and the police are self-perpetuating institutions that seem to continue their methods of oppression regardless of who's in power. My question is, have you or anybody else in your administration made negotiations to have the entire military structure broken down before your return?
God. Good question. If I want to continue to be frank with you, I just have to say the Haitian people doesn't need an army. And they often say that they don't need an army, they need a police force. That's what they say. Now, because I have to respect the Constitution, I have to recognize that I cannot disband the army. But if I have to be honest and rational, I have to recognize that without a change in this army, there is no way to talk about the restoration of democracy and to build a society of law. That's why we are building pressure, asking for help to see how we can free the army from the leadership, because the army is captive of its own leadership. If we can do that and then have a program to train the army, at the same time we separate the army from the police according to our constitution, that can create a new climate of political stability where the police will have to protect human rights, the army will have to do only what the constitution asks it to do, and the executive branch doing only what the same constitution asks him to do. That's why today I'm trying to do my best to have that done, but not asking for disbanding the army because of the Constitution.
I'm asking what I'm afraid will be the last question.
court in Haiti, do you see any desirability, need, or possibility of some form of international or foreign peacekeeping or military force, whether through the UN, the OAS, the USA, or whatever?
Thank you. We already asked for having 3,000 international observers in Haiti before going back, because we are not afraid of the international community. On the opposite, we want to have with us witnesses from the international community in Haiti while we are respecting human rights. But the coup leaders, they are beating the international observers the way we heard. All that because they don't want any international presence building democracy with the Haitian people. They don't want that, it's clear. And we think from the UN, from the US, from the OAS, there is a possibility. We can have an international presence in Haiti if they want. And it's easier than having a military intervention. Just having a mission from the international community will cost less than a military intervention. Less in terms of money, less in terms of human choice, because we choose a peaceful way to solve that problem. By having a total embargo, long time ago, we would have the problem. Because we don't see the will to have that embargo, we don't think we will see the will to have any kind of military intervention, which we don't want. Because we are sure, in a peaceful way, if there is the political will from the international community, from the US, we can solve that problem.
Thank you to you. Thanks a lot.